Hello and welcome to another special EC podcast. We're not riding in cars with boys talking about cricket. We're now sitting in Kickers Sports Bar drinking coffee with Bertus. So we've just seen a quick result, I think is probably the best way of putting it. The United Arab Emirates were kept to 80 for 9 from 20 overs, and the Netherlands chased them down on the first ball of the 16th over, only 2 wickets down. So the Netherlands join Ireland and Papua New Guinea. You're going to the big dance, as we've been told. But in the spirit of Adam Collins and Jeff Lemmer, I'm going to give Bertus 30 seconds or so to summarise the match.
Well, yeah, I've lost at least half of my bet with Jay, and quite comprehensively. Yeah, so what you saw... And the UAE chose to bat first, made to regret it pretty quickly by the Dutch pace quartet. Paul van Meekeren especially looking fiery at the top there. And the power play, what was it? I think we were at 5-14 at the end of the power play or something along those lines. And I think we were all a bit surprised to see that rather than going in for the kill, the Dutch maybe did sort of turn to spin, sort of let the game drift a bit. But when the quicks came back... you saw that the two set bats were apparently willing to try and hook Brandon Glover. That didn't work out very well for them. Tim van Gugten at the death, clinical. And 80 for 9, they'd have been pretty pleased with that. Bit of a wobble at the top of the order when Max O'Dowd played all around one from Rowan Mustafa, first ball of the second over, but a great mature knock from Ben Cooper saw them home. With support from Ackerman and Ryan Tendulskar.
A little bit longer than 30 seconds, but we'll let it slide. I think we've only got... it was a lot longer. It's always a tough one to talk about it or to think about when you talk about commanding performances. You know, you've watched a lot of Dutch cricket. How does that rate in terms of not a do-or-die game, but an important match, and to see a performance like that?
Yeah, it's just a question of a plan coming together, I think. It's just a fantastic fast bowling performance. And we knew that the Dutch had that firepower in their seam attack, that they could do that if they had a wicket that would work with them. The wicket was, and I think as Raza found to his cost, was a lot more seam-friendly, certainly in the first innings, than I think anybody had even expected. It was a fresh wicket. The Dutch did know that going in, so... I think that's why you saw Vizet sitting this one out and taking the extra bowler. That's just really paid off for them. And for a team where they've been getting things not quite right and they've not really worked, like seen what their plans are. And as Peter Saylor said in the press conference, you know, maybe they'd been looking to experiment a little bit too much and thinking too hard about what they were doing rather than just sticking with what they do very well. And what they did very well today was bowl fast.
You did mention about them not going in for the kill, and Peter was asked about that in the press conference. Peter Della Penna was prosecuting as well as your good self. I think you got the question out early there before PDP got on top of him in the witness box like Perry Mason. I did think it was quite strange as to how well van Meekeren especially, and I know that Glover ended up with the amazing figures of 4 for 12 from his allotted 4 overs. But it did seem strange to see van Meekeren really getting ahead of steam, bowling those hard lengths that fast bowlers love these days on a wicket that was giving, well, was very conducive for fast bowling. And then when he came back to bowl, he was bowling the slower ball cutters, which really, you know, I know that's his job, but considering how effective he was early on, it just seems perhaps foot on throat and maybe a little bit too... programmed perhaps, but anyway, that be that as it may, that means that we have a third team going to Australia. The Netherlands will now play against Ireland in the first semi-final on Friday morning, and that also means that the UAE backs up tomorrow, same time, 10 past 2 in the afternoon, to play against Scotland. Now, we'll preview that match tomorrow. We'll go into depth there because it's quite a matchup with Scotland in a little bit out of sorts, whether it's from health reasons with a lot of players affected by the heat, but also some form issues as well. But we'll now go to the match that will be on in around just over 2 hours' time as we're recording this now, which is Namibia against Oman. Bertus, we've got through this first game. How do you see this second playoff shaping up?
Well, again, it's a tough call. And while they do get a do-over against Hong Kong for the losers, you still look at this and you go, this is a game you really, really have to win. Just psychologically coming off the back of a loss against a Hong Kong side that have really rallied quite well, considering the difficulties that they've had in terms of team selection and Andrew Rath leaving. They look actually a far more settled outfit than they have than they did at the beginning of the tournament. So, getting back to the game itself, Namibia, they've put up some fairly big scores just in their last couple of games. But coming up against Oman, who shock loss to Jersey aside, we all picked as maybe a smart bet for to take the title here. I'm still backing Oman in this. Although, the way that Namibia have gone about this tournament, the way that they do tend to get better and better as these tournaments go on, it's a very tough call.
Yeah, it's interesting looking through the stats as well. They're quite similar on the batting side, where they each have one batter who's been quite successful. Gerhard Erasmus, their captain, is number four on the runs list. He scored 198 at a tick under 50, at striking almost 150. And Jatinder Singh's only one position behind at 193, striking a little bit slower. The bowling side, though, it's interesting to see that Oman, with the strong pace attack of Nadeem and, Kalim Mullah hasn't played, has he? He's been left out of the side. But they've actually had their spinners that have been leading the way for them. And Kawa Ali is up there as their highest wicket taker, but not quite a way back. He's taken 9 wickets. And then Amir Kalim, coming back into the side, has taken 8. So it's, to me, it's almost one of those matches where you look at your key men, but beware of the ones that you may be ignoring. Because Namibia's got Craig Williams down the order and JP Kutzer and JJ Smith, whilst they've had one or two decent innings, really haven't set the tournament alight. But I guess with their style of play, they're going to be quite hit or miss. What are the key players, or who are the key players you think that we'll be looking out for later tonight?
Well, the thing about this Namibia side, of course, is that they do bat deep, and they hit big a long way down the order. When you've got, you know, Freilich and Green or Williams coming in, sometimes, you know, 7, 8 or even 9, the danger is going to stay there. And what we've also seen, that Oman have generally been quite reliant on their spinners throughout. Well, the wicket that we saw today, it's not going to play quite the same we expect in the late game. But compared to, say, what Oman have been playing on through the tournament so far, it will be a different one. It's something that may suit Namibia rather better. And of course, bear in mind that Oman, that's their first time over this over here in Dubai for them. So it could be at a slight disadvantage. Maybe Kalim Mullah, they haven't really played, but we might see him coming into the side now. And it might be that Oman will be looking to their seam attack, which hasn't necessarily been quite as dominant as they have been in the past.
Sorry, I was just taking the microphone off you. I went for a trigger movement there and you handed it back to me. Apologies, Bertus. I'm just thinking as you're talking that we're still waiting to hear which groups some of these teams will go into, depending on their rankings out of this event. And for those that haven't seen the news, the ICC has just announced that Shakib Al Hassan, the number one ranked all-rounder in ODIs and the Bangladesh captain, has been banned. He's been suspended for 2 years. But one of those years is suspended, so he'll be banned from all cricket for a year, and that ban will end after the first round of the T20 World Cup in Australia. So you'd have to be thinking a lot of these teams will be looking at the potential matchups that they'll be having in Australia, whether they're going to be in Hobart or the Geelong group. And Afghanistan would have qualified already for the Super 12, so they'll either be with Sri Lanka or with Bangladesh. You'd have to think that some of these teams might actually be hoping to get into Bangladesh's group.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? And I guess we don't know whether the teams have been told, but certainly nothing's been made public by the ICC yet. And it is a bit strange, if sadly somewhat typical, that you're going through a tournament like this not entirely clear on what it is that you're playing for. But yeah, the tournament itself is still a long way off, and a lot can happen between then and now. The loss of Shakib, it's huge for Bangladesh. But I don't think any of the teams here will be thinking too hard yet about the groups that they're going to be landing in. Because this time round, of course, it is a 12-team tournament masquerading as a 16-team tournament rather than a 10-team tournament masquerading as a 16-team tournament. You've got two teams coming through from each of those groups. So you can worry a little bit about whether you're looking at Sri Lanka or Bangladesh, but you're going to be equally concerned about who the other ones are coming up from this tournament and where you land there. I think at this point, the permutations are too tricky. I think that anyone's really going to be worrying too much about that.
Okay, well, we'll keep it short and sharp. We'll make it nice and easy for all those people tucking into their cocoa, wherever you are around the world, probably quite late, definitely in the Eastern Hemisphere. But prediction time, Burtis, and Bilal Khan was, of course, the other fast bowler. I had a mental blank there trying to remember if he's got the same number of wickets as Amir, but having seen the pitch for the afternoon game, has that changed your thoughts at all about the type of match that we'll be watching on and who you're going to be tipping?
It certainly made me a lot more nervous that Jay could be going 2 from 2 in the predictions here, but I feel that it would be unsporting of me to switch now. Now I'm gonna stick with my Oman prediction, but I say that I'm not hugely comfortable with it anymore.
I like that you've stuck with it, and I like even more so that you tipped against the Netherlands. But it's a very very clever tip there, because you're a winner either way, then, aren't you? If the UAE had won, then you're the smarter guy, of course. But you may have had a little grin on your face to see the result for the Netherlands, and when Peter Saylor was asked, would they be celebrating? He gave a very, very assured yes. I had visions of Shane Warne going around with a microphone asking if he was thirsty. I was tempted to ask him if he was thirsty, no, but I'd never do that. But so you never know if we run into the men in orange later on to see what state they're in. But I do think of a team that's, I wouldn't say through the ringer, but for the amount of changes they've been through, or the amount of change, I should say, the number of changes. For those pedants out there, I'm always on people about that, so I best get it right, that they definitely deserve to celebrate. And vindication, perhaps, for Ryan Campbell, and I know there's been a lot of discussion about the, I might throw it back to you, Burtis, before we sign off, but about the strategy around the type of players that they've been going after and the ones they've left behind, and also how they've worked through their squads to get to this point now where they just seem to have built nicely, even when they were quite unsettled in the squad.
Well, yes. I mean, I've spoken before about some of the doubts I've had about the way that Cambo's approached the game, but this is very much the style of cricket that they've been looking to play, and it came off quite spectacularly today. Now, one game is one game, but I think that that Cambo and of course Chris Little, the bowling coach, will be pretty pleased today, and probably might have an "I told you so" coming my way.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I dare say there'll be a few words spoken this evening over a few Coca-Colas. But as always, thank you everyone for listening, and hope you've been enjoying Emerging Cricket's coverage. Well, of course, and all the other coverage that's been coming out, Paul Radley and Peter Della Penna for their respective agencies, and the man in front of me who got his first page scoop on CricBuzz, only to look one article down to realise that he had the top two articles on CricBuzz. But red letter day indeed. So thank you everyone for listening, and keep up to date with everything on the men's T20 World Cup qualifier across all of our social media channels and emergingcricket.com. But this is Tim Cutler alongside Burtis de Jong, wishing you a great day or evening wherever you are in the emerging cricket world.